Welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable. Our special guest today is author Molly Mearn. Molly is a South Australian writer. She holds a Bachelor of Dance degree, a Master of Creative Arts, and is currently a PhD candidate in creative writing. Her poetry has been published in various anthologies, including Overland, Transnational Literature, and Friendly Street, and her most recent work is Heart of the Grass Tree. Molly, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Hello, thank you.
Molly, Hannah Kent has described your book as a story of love, family, and belonging set against the landscape and history of Kangaroo Island. And it is all that, but there are also some other aspects. There is some violence at some parts of the book.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, so the book really draws on some of the early history on Kangaroo Island, which I'm sure we'll get into, but the early history entails Aboriginal women being stolen from the mainland and the islands of the Bass Strait and Tasmania to live and work on the island as accomplices to sealing with the sealer men. So the book really draws on that early history, but that story is framed by the kind of present-day family stories as well.
It doesn't sound like a happy story, but the stealing of women, it's like the ancient Roman Sabines, and I think you at one stage you even refer to a Sabine expedition. But it's you're able to bring in some nuances so that perhaps we can look on it a little bit differently.
Yeah, I'm glad you feel that because I really did want to give a nuanced perspective on this. What I was most interested in, aside from just having a real love of the place of Kangaroo Island and a real affinity with the place, I was really interested in the point of intersection of culture which happened in the early 1800s around this sealing industry. And it was brutal, and if you think about women being stolen and what that actually means and physically has to happen for a woman to be stolen, it certainly was brutal. But then, you know, some really interesting things happened on the island after that point around the cultures learning from one another. And I was interested in exploring all those parts of the history, the violence and the cooperation and the coming together and the families, and, you know, so it's a very big story in lots of ways.
It is that. And we're talking, I suppose the relevant date was 1836 when Kangaroo Island became, I guess, part of Australia. But were there any local women there? I mean, you talk about the Tasmanian women and the mainland women, but no locals on Kangaroo Island?
South Australia was officially settled in 1836, and the island was actually pegged as the site for the new colony by the South Australia Company. But when the free settlers started arriving on Kangaroo Island, they realised it was already inhabited by these sealing communities. So at that point, the only women on the island were the Indigenous women. And so when the ships started arriving, there were no non-Indigenous women on the island. But Kangaroo Island was also, thousands of years ago, was connected to the mainland. You know, there's evidence to show that Indigenous people lived there then when it was connected, but once it became separated from the mainland, it was not a place inhabited by humans.
In fact, it was called the Island of Death, I think. Was there some reason for that?
Yeah, well, so the Narrangeri Nation, whose country encompasses Kangaroo Island, they did call it your land of the dead, or where you go when you die. And that sort of related to their creation story, which sees their creator hero travel across South Australia, making the landmarks and the song lines. But his final resting place is Kangaroo Island before he goes up to the Milky Way. So they really did see it as a spiritual place a sort of in-between place and certainly not somewhere that you would live. So I was so fascinated by all these layers of history and story related to the island, that right back to those ancient times, to that the 1800s and to, you know, and the stories that keep building to now as well.
As white people, do you feel a little bit uncomfortable talking about Aboriginal stories?
Look, it's certainly something that I've wrestled with for the whole writing of this novel, which in the beginning encompassed a lot of research and a lot of talking to people in the Narrangeri community. And I chose to talk to them, even though there's a lot of Tasmanian Aboriginal people connected to the island as well, just because as a South Australian, you know, they were the community that I could most easily spend time with. You know, the most important thing is consultation when writing about a culture that's not your own. But what I really wanted to focus on within this is, as I mentioned earlier, that point of cross-cultural contact. So I felt like, you know, that was a space I could write into. There's obviously spaces that a non-Indigenous person, you know, a white woman, needs to stay out of and, you know, pay respect to and acknowledge that, that, you know, they don't have entry or a place to talk about certain things. But if I focused on that shared space, I felt really it was my responsibility to sort of understand that shared history and acknowledge it and pay respect to it.
And you did consult, I understand. Some of the characters even are real people. I think Piebald is someone mentioned in the novel, and I think you say he was actually a real person.
Yeah, so some of the characters are sketched from real-life personalities, particularly some of the Seela men. And in fact, most of the characters in the 1800 section of the story are sketched from biographies that I have found on the record. But I was careful not to make, like Piebald, for instance, who's a very well-known personality on Kangaroo Island, and there's another one, Nathaniel Thomas, who built the first sort of farm on the island, and whose families, you know, went on to stay on the island for many generations. I was careful to not make them the main characters because, you know, this was a fiction and I wanted to flesh out some of the lesser known biographies that you just sort of catch glimpses of on the record. So all of it is, all of those characters are grounded in research, but they have been imaginatively fleshed out.
And we're speaking today with Molly Mearn, the author of a new book called The Heart of the Grass Tree, which is set in Kangaroo Island. We're going to take a short break now. We're going to listen to a song that's referred to in the book. This is a song by Van Morrison, and it's called Beside You.
Little Jim is gone away out on the back street, out of the window to the falling rain, right on time, right on time. That's why I broke an arrow with his finger down the road so dark and narrow. Just before the sun is six bells chime, and all the dogs are barking way out on the damp and studded highway where you wander and you roam from your retreat and view. Way over on the railroad, Tomorrow all the tipping trucks will unload together. Every scrapbook stuck with glue, and I'll stand beside you. To never, never, never wonder why at all. No, 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 no. To never, never wonder why at all. To never, never, never wonder why it's gotta be. It has to be. Way across the country with a hillside mountain glide. The dynamo of your smile caressed the barefoot virgin child to wander. Past your window with a lantern lit, you held it in the doorway and you kissed against the pointed idle breeze. And said your time was open, go well on your merry way. Past the brazen footlets of the silent seas, eh? You breathe in, you breathe out, 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 and your head. This time it's found you. You turn around, you turn around, you turn around, you turn around, and I'm beside you. Beside you. Oh, darling. To never, never wonder why at all. No, 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 no. To never, never, never wonder why at all. To never, never, never wonder why it's gotta be. It has to be. And I'm beside you. To never, never wonder why at all. I'm beside you, beside you, beside you, beside you.
That was Beside You by Van Morrison, taken from the Astral Weeks album. And we're speaking today with Molly Mearn, who is the author of a new book, The Heart of the Grass Tree.
I was just going to say, I'm really glad that we get to hear the song.
Oh, very appropriate song, I think, for a mystical place like Kangaroo Island. You mentioned a minute ago that there are gaps in the Kangaroo Island history. Is that what one of your aims was, to fill in some of those gaps?
I don't think I can fill in the gaps. I don't think I would have the sort of resource to do that, but I wanted to draw attention to the gaps, or, you know, acknowledge those gaps. And one of the sort of abiding concerns that came out of my conversations or yarning with Narrangeri elders was this notion of the gaps in their history, so that, you know, once their women were stolen, it becomes very hard to then trace back, and that's where those gaps come from. And you know, that was when I asked them about this Kangaroo Island history, that was the main concern. You know, we have these gaps now that can't be traced, and And so I mentioned before that, you know, you can find information about the CLMN on the record. It's still a bit gappy for them too, but less so than for the women. And so I guess it's not so much a filling in the gaps, but just making space to acknowledge that they're there.
It's something we really need to be aware of in Australia, isn't it? Our history, and this history of women being stolen and taken to Kangaroo Island for the sealers as sort of de facto wives, but really not as elevated as that. It's something we do need to be aware of, isn't it?
I really think we do, and you know, for so many reasons, and especially when we think about the contribution that those, you know, in this particular case, those women made on Kangaroo Island, is just incredible. And, you know, those sealer men wouldn't have been able to survive without them. They were skilled in bushcraft and in sealing and in skinning and trapping, and they really contributed to the early, you know, one of our first export industries, which was seal skin. And I've just been fascinated to learn about how, you know, doesn't surprise me at all, but just how skillful and change adept they were to this situation. I also feel it's important not to make this a kind of conqueror and conquered type of, you know, binary, because these women were inventive and had agency in many ways as well.
We mentioned how you'd consulted the local elders. There's one story there which I'm just wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing with us. It was a beautiful story about the seal brother.
In the book, there's a grandmother, Nell, and she is part of the present day sort of time frame. And she used to tell her grandchildren and her daughter this story about seal brother. And it comes from a Scottish folk tale of the Selkies, which there's many, many tales from that part of the world of seal men and women that become seals or you know, really swap between this seal and human form. And so Nell tells this story of seal brother, and that's about a brother and sister who live on an island in Scotland, and they love to swim, and he's always fascinated by the seals and wants to really be a seal. And, you know, one day he gets shipwrecked out at sea with his father. They're out fishing and he disappears. And the rest of the family are very surprised because he's always been such a strong swimmer. And the sister really mourns what she imagines is the death of her brother for years. And then one day when she's walking along the beach, she sees these prints in the sand that look like flipper prints. But as she follows them up to the rocks, they turn into footprints. And when she arrives at the cave, there's a sort of tall young man there with long hair, and she realises it's her brother, and he tells her that he's become a seal person. And the reason I put this story in there is because I wanted to acknowledge this idea of oral culture and oral storytelling, which also is a huge part of Indigenous culture, but also in all, you know, ancient cultures across the world. So I wanted to bring that in, especially with the focus on sealing on Kangaroo Island.
Yeah, it is a beautiful story. And at one stage, the historical character, William, asks what it is to be a man. And I'm wondering if you have an answer as to what it is to be a man.
Well, I think what it is to be a man is to be loving and generous, and to protect the ones that you love. And William is really grappling with these ideas when he says that line. He's a teenager, I suppose. I imagine he's about 16, so he's kind of in that beautiful and terrible phase between, you know, boyhood and manhood. Well, I shouldn't say terrible, I should say terrifying. And he's really grappling with these ideas because the men around him are so violent on the most part, or they, you know, and they take what they want and they do what they want. And I think he also says, you know, is it to take the light from another's eyes? And, you know, and he's really my hero of the story, because he transforms that concept of masculinity by really meeting Maringani, who's the Aboriginal girl, by really meeting her in the space, in the shared space that they occupy, and actually and loving her from his heart.
It's wonderful that he can come out of an upbringing like that with this terrible character, Anderson, who doesn't seem to have a lot of positives that you describe in the story.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's probably, sometimes I think, you know, you're just writing with hope that could happen. Whether it actually could, I don't know. But certainly writing Anderson, who's William's father, I just mostly felt sorry for him, you know, because he just couldn't quite get himself, you know, he just didn't understand enough to be a better man.
And I love the symbolism. The title of the book is Heart of the Grass Tree, and you describe what happens when a grass tree gets caught in a fire, that it burns from the heart and then it releases its seeds like an offering. Is that also symbolic of what you're talking about in the story?
Yeah, but I'm really, really glad you brought this up, because the grass tree is the abiding metaphor of the whole book. You know, it's a plant that is very hardy, and it's also a very old plant in that it takes hundreds of years to grow. So I love the idea of it witnessing, you know, what it would witness in that time, the changes it would see. It, like you say, gets germinated by fire, so it needs fire to survive. And then, you know, at its heart is this grass trees do have a heart that sits beneath the stem, the big, long, jutting stem. And this heart can be cut out and eaten when there's no water. So the Narangeri say water when there's none. So I love this idea of, you know, in the harshest environment, this, you know, gnarled, woody tree has this nourishing heart. And the grass tree metaphor really links the two time frames as well, because on Kangaroo Island, the grass tree was also used by the settlers. They harvested grass trees, or yakkas, as they're sometimes called, for its gum to make explosives, and also things like furniture polish and stuff like that. So it's, you know, it's got these sort of traditional practices around the tree, and then more colonial practices, and they're still there on the island, you know, growing profusely, just this strange, beautiful plant.
Well, that's another thing to look out for, and yes, I've been to Kangaroo Island. I think it's a beautiful, fantastic place to go.
It is so beautiful. I think partly that's because it still retains a lot of its native vegetation. You know, so most places we go to are just cleared. And of course, some of it is cleared. It's, you know, there's a lot of farming on Kangaroo Island as well, but there's whole pockets and areas where you can feel the landscape as it was thousands of years ago.
And we're speaking with Molly Mearn, the author of The Heart of the Grass Tree. Molly, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you picked and why?
Yeah, so I've picked a song called Down by the Water by PJ Harvey. And the reason I picked this song is because it ties in with the theme of water in this novel, and also mothers and daughters. And I also listened to a lot of PJ Harvey when I was writing the book, just because she's, you know, passionate and a strong woman, and for some reason listening to her music helped me to write some of the more difficult scenes. And that's why I picked this song.
I lost my heart under the bridge to that little girl. So much to me. Blue-eyed
And that was Down by the Water by PJ Harvey, that was specially selected for us today by our guest Molly Mearn. So Molly, it just remains for me to thank you very much for being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been really interesting talking to you. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you would like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.